Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving week. It's November 25th. We say that at the top of each broadcast. As many of you download this broadcast and go, which program am I listening to? You're listening to the Thanksgiving week broadcast, November 25th. Appreciate you being with us. Appreciate you telling others about it. In the Hot Topic segment today, we're talking about a really, really hot topic. It's mergers and mergers and acquisitions. Excuse me. There's some accusing a lot of people of they're selling or buying, but we got mergers and acquisitions going on, M&A. We've got as our special guest Chuck Klein, who I'm privileged to have as my business partner, but he's also recognized in, you know, beyond his 40-year status as a veteran of the mortgage industry, he's also 20 years of intense mortgage experience, M&A experience specifically, and so you're going to hear from him later in the broadcast. It's going to be fascinating. I know we got Paul Mahl who's going to be dialing in. I know, just know Paul would love to stay on here and be a part of this all the way to the end. Again, zing Chuck with all kinds of questions, but he has to leave, but we'll have him on a little bit later in broadcast. Tony Garitano will be on the broadcast. The prop doctor is traveling, so he will not be with us. But we appreciate you being with us. Again, a special welcome goes out to our first-time listeners. And, of course, we thank the tens of thousands of mortgage professionals who each week make this broadcast their way of staying on top of everything that's going on in the industry. I want to say a special thank you to United Guarantee. Folks, this is the United Guarantee wants to wish everyone here on the broadcast and all our listeners a very happy Thanksgiving. It's a special celebration for United Guarantee as they celebrate their 50th anniversary this year. United Guarantee is thankful to all of its customers for helping the company reach this important milestone. After it got started in 1963 with only three employees, has now grown from their small office in downtown Greensboro, North Carolina, to it now employs over 1,000 professionals and support staff in its headquarters and locations throughout the United States. Staff at United Guarantee expresses their gratitude to everyone that has made this celebration possible and wishes all of our listeners and all of their clients through this broadcast happy Thanksgiving and for the blessings for the upcoming holiday. Thank you, United Guarantee. Appreciate you being with us, and we're proud that they're going to continue their sponsorship with us. Their contract came up, and they're going to be continuing on with us. We're really pleased about that. Joe Farr.
Hey,
you're
Dave.
Not so far. It's, you know, it's freezing cold. I mean, we always start with a weather report, then we get into a market report. But Texas, man, normally we're calling Alice up in Detroit and harassing her about, you know, it's 85 degrees down there. How cold is it up there, Alice? Well, Alice sent her cold weather down here, and joined.
It's miserable.
Boy, it's terrible. You know, Chuck Klein is north of us up in Waco, so we'll see what the degree temperature difference is there. But anyway, good to have you going on. What's the temperature of the markets right now, Joe?
Well, it's been up and down, you know. It started out kind of cool and it got hot, now it's getting cool again. That's probably pretty bad. But that has been what's happened this morning so far, Dave. The first hour and a half or so of the morning, MBS prices were down a little bit from where they ended the day Friday, and they rallied and spent the next couple hours up about four or more above that same measure. But they've since fallen back. You know, they're now just about flat on the day, and we did see some favorable price changes on that move higher soon after 9:30 Eastern time. And those who saw favorable price changes, certainly you may be at risk of getting an unfavorable price change. And this movement, I think, is indicative of a holiday week kind of movement. There hadn't been a lot of news coming out. The only thing that came out really today was the October pending home sales that came out at 10 o'clock. And they were a little bit weaker than expected. Sales missed to the downside. They fell 0.6% from September when a 1% increase was expected. The market rallied a little bit on that news, and that's what helped it to get up to that plus 4 to 6 30 seconds on the day. But it, as I mentioned, has since fallen all the way back to flat on the day. So, you know, it moved it, but it didn't hold.
Well,
the realtors.
What's interesting about that, Joe, is the number for the previous month was a minus 5.6. And so the fact that it came in at minus 6 tenths is, and even though it was supposed to be a plus positive, I mean, is this a sign that, that we're seeing things starting to stabilize, or is it just on a seesaw back and forth based on Fed data, Fed
commentary? Well, I think the bigger headline is that it's been down now for several months in a row, and
right.
it's down year over year, which we hadn't seen this in a while. And the realtors and identifying the causes of this have blamed the government shutdown to some mm-hmm. extent. As with existing home sales, there's a shortage in inventory and underwriting still a little tight. But mortgage rates sure shouldn't be what's causing it. Mortgage rates during the month of October were better than they were in either September or August and July too. So we've had the best rates in the last 4 months in October. So, I think the government shutdown has something to do with it. I think as we're going into the winter months, these are seasonally adjusted, but we did have a pretty good summer, so we'll just pull out of it.
They just are trying to keep every positive thing going because they don't want anyone disappearing out of the market. They need every buyer, active buyer in there. Let's go into last week. We had prices fell about 10, 30 seconds. What contributed to that?
Almost 100% the Fed. Actually, it's the minutes of the Fed that came out on Wednesday. That showed a much bigger divide among the Fed members as to when they thought they should begin to taper. Some believe they should begin to taper in the next few months, some in the next few meetings, and some much more dovish and really couldn't say when they would expect to taper. And coming off of the week when Yellen at her confirmation hearings offered a very dovish testimony, and then following that by Bernanke, who also offered a fairly dovish thought on the environment, the minutes kind of caught people by surprise.
Exactly right.
Dave, the reaction was a pretty big drop in prices. In fact, most of the gain that occurred the week before on Yellen's comments were reversed. And so, it's still a market that's driven very heavily by what the Fed is doing and what economic information comes out. It's not so much the impact of the economic information on inflation like it ordinarily should be, but it's the economic information's impact on the Fed and the Fed decision to taper.
Right, right.
Fed's totally got their total control right at the moment. And as far as it relates to how they respond to economic data, therefore direct correlation to interest rates. Interesting.
Yeah.
What do we got? Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say last week the economic data, besides the existing home sales that came out, or besides the Fed meeting, included the existing home sales. They were down a little bit. Philly Fed fell a little bit as well. The nice thing for interest rates is that inflation's still extremely low. Both CPI and PPI came out well under 2% on an annualized basis. Core CPI at 1.7, core PPI at 1.4. So the Fed has no concern about inflation. It's just a matter of how they get out of this quantitative easing situation and disrupt the market as little as possible.
Interesting. So this week, Andy, what's your thoughts? Come on, look in the crystal ball. Give us your thoughts.
Well, ordinarily, a holiday week like this is fairly thinly traded, and sometimes just absolutely nothing can go on. But then you'll see a big blip today starting out to be fairly volatile, which is a consequence of having a thinly traded market at times. So I anticipate that there'll be some volatility. There's very little on the calendar. The biggest thing on the calendar is the durable orders report tomorrow. No, on Wednesday. It is expecting to show a decline, but once you strip out the volatile airplane orders, the transportation orders, you get to a small increase. And so, that's a sign of reasonable growth, not excessive growth, its impact on the Fed will probably be minimal if it comes in as expected. Treasury auctions tomorrow and Wednesday could have
anything
an impact.
Anything significant? Do you think they're, I mean, if they go bad. Yeah, I mean, it's only if something, if we get a surprise and they go really badly.
Yeah, we had some good auctions last week, and they didn't really impact mortgage prices all that much. Strong auction, so.
Yeah, so pay attention to it. Nothing scheduled for Friday as far as the news release, right?
Nothing on Friday.
So we can all take Thanksgiving, and the markets are closed, take most of Friday off, not expect anything. It's sure up there.
Well, yeah, the markets are open on Friday, but they'll close early. I think they close at 2 o'clock on Friday.
If this week is light trading, what's Friday going to be like? Well, Joe Farr, thank you so much.
Yeah. We will be watching for you. We'll let you know.
You will be at your seat pumping out those valuable text messages and, you know, quick reports on the market. It's so
valuable.
I may
not, but Dan will be.
Well, Dan will be. So you're going to take the day off and make Dr. Dan work, huh? Okay, well, Dan is listening to this, hopefully. Dan, our heart goes out to you. Thanks to everyone. Joe, happy Thanksgiving to you. Thanks to everyone at MBS Quote Line. We are very grateful and thankful for you being a part of this broadcast and part of what we're doing.
Well, thank you.
We're going to have Paul Mollo come up here in just a moment. Always entertaining, sometimes controversial, but he's got some good stuff for us, so stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked the loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quote Line can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quote Line monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quote Line, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quote Line can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteLine.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us. We have Paul Mollo on the line. Always fun to have Paul on with IMF News. You can check the blog out at imfnews.com. Paul Mollo, what do you have for us today?
Well, interesting week. The speculation, there is lots of speculation about the GSE loan limits. Unfortunately, FIFA, or as they like to be called, FHFA, FIFA is, of course, a soccer organization that all the soccer fans know all about, they're not giving anyone any guidance on loan limits. So we all know they're going to say something. We all know the industry is going to get 6 months. But is Edward DeMarco, the acting director, is he actually going to do something or punt and let Mel Watt, who is supposed to be confirmed by the Senate eventually, maybe in early December, is he going to let Watt just take over the whole issue of what should be done for loan limits? So that's something we have on imfnews.com today. I have heard no solid leaks about, you know, which way this thing is going to go. We all know it's going to go down. But, the talk is that once Watt is in there, maybe he's not going to do anything, that he's going to put the kibosh on lowering loan limits for 2014. Now 2015 is wide open. So anyway, everyone's watching it. Some people think the story's overplayed because whatever reduction they're talking about is minimal, but it's being watched closely by people in the jumbo sector. So that's going on. We have a couple MSR deals hitting the market today. IMA from Denver's out there. They have $10 billion in the market this week. Mountain View Capital's out there with a portfolio. I know Presswick from Virginia's got some smaller deals out there. Phoenix Capital, which is, like the Kremlin when it comes to information, they have some deals out there, I presume, but, they haven't returned a phone call in 10 years. Or I shouldn't say that. I did talk to someone there. That's an interesting shop. They've been doing a lot of the B of A deals, but B of A is
right.
Considered not as active as they used to be, and they're definitely not unloading the big chunks of MSRs that they were getting rid of earlier in the year. There's an interesting report out there from Moody's. This came out late last week. Moody's basically said, you know, the loan quality of retail versus brokers and correspondents is now equal and no one has to worry anymore. We also have a report from John Bancroft who crunched the numbers and found out that bank earnings from mortgages took a tumble in the third quarter. That's not surprising, but it was down 42%. So that's a fairly big,
that's a big drop.
Decline. Yeah, and a lot of it obviously is tied to reduced production revenue, which sort of feeds into the servicing thing because there's speculation and talk that to, you know, make money going forward in the next couple quarters, that companies that can afford to are going to sell servicing rights, you know, to help pad their bottom line because the production revenues disappear.
Right.
So, you know, that's something something to watch. So, you know, that's sort of the good stuff. There's a IG report on, you know, how they held DOJ with 55 criminal convictions. I'm not sure how huge that is, but it's sort of a tally sort of thing. And late last week, we blogged about an interesting lawsuit filed by W.J. Bradley against RPM Mortgage, its owners, and some of the top loan officers they hired, who supposedly downloaded 5,000 loan files from the company. There's a lot of back and forth. We're going to do a big write-up on it the first week in December. What's so interesting about that, it involves some very high-profile top loan officers in the U.S. who are ranked among the top 15, and that's a very interesting case. So we'll get more into that the first week in December. So that's the long and short of it, David.
Well, it's always good to have you on. You wrote a good article about M&A and featuring or commenting, quoting Chuck Klein. Any thoughts you want to share about that? That was a good article last week, kind of giving an update. What's your thoughts on
him? Oh, yeah. Chuck Klein, I think you know him, don't you, David?
I do know this guy. Yeah. He's a Baylor
Chuck
fan.
Chuck and Larry Charbonneau and some other M&A people who did not want to be quoted, but luckily Chuck and Larry went on the record. And Chuck had a lot of interesting things to say about the M&A business. I know you guys are working on a couple deals. It's an interesting time, and I'm sure Chuck will talk more about it when he's on your show in a little while. But, you know, in the M&A business, you know, you never know when it's the right time to sell. And sometimes you wait too long, and I'm sure Chuck will talk a bit about that. You know, when do you finally pull the trigger and you know, finally say, okay, it's time to do a deal? And that's something that Chuck talked about with me as well as Larry Charbonneau, that sometimes these mortgage guys who, you know, they're emotionally attached to the companies, and they just don't know when to sell. But we're going to see a lot of sales next year. And, again, I'm sure Chuck will talk more about that with you in a little bit.
Yeah, the momentum of M&A transactions is definitely, I don't know if it's feverish, but it's definitely up there. We're going to be talking more about it. Paul, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day, and greet everyone there. Folks, check out the blog, check out the website, and sign up for the newsletter, imfnews.com. Anyone's looking for a great place to advertise, too, by the way, that's a great place to advertise. They get a lot of.
And you take it from your source media budgets for next year.
I didn't hear anything
I'm just
about
kidding.
That. I know every time you say that. I just expect
I
a phone call.
But
anyway, appreciate you being here with us. Have yourself a great Thanksgiving, Paul. One of the things
Thank
we're grateful
you. Thank
for.
Thank you for having me.
We're thankful to have you, Bart, to be at Bart's broadcast each week. Thanks, Paul. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Appreciate it. Bye, David. Have a good one.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, we go to the talented and always interesting, valuable, adorable, lovable Alice Alvey. Even though she brings us some bad news occasionally, we always love to have her on the broadcast. That giggle just does it for me every time. If I'm going to have to get bad news, at least make me kind of just giggle about it or try to find something humorous in there. Alice, we don't shoot messengers here. What do you got for us? You got a big RESPA update. Is this good news or
I guess it depends how you look at it, right? I mean, I do firmly believe that the best way to survive this industry is to kind of joke along the way, right? You got to just kind of take it lighthearted and keep moving forward. And so I would consider that the RESPA that we have as a final rule is overall good because certain things that would have been very painful did not come through. And a lot of it is written the way we knew it and understood it from the proposed rule with some key changes. So I thought today, since no one, I'm sure, has really read all 1,888 pages yet, now, I just want – I'm sure there are a few people that spend all weekend reading it. but I did have a little bit of a life this weekend and just did the overview. And I really would like to try and give everybody a bit of a summary on this, on what do I have to really care about, right? MBA came out with its early summary. I go through things a little bit differently. I like to make sure we talk about where does the rubber meet the road, right? Where, what is actually going to be the biggest deal on this? And so there are several things that are still the same. Some of the things that I'll focus on right now that are the changes is there are some changes in the tolerance levels. You know, fees charged by an affiliate are moving to a zero tolerance. Fees charged by service providers that you selected are going to move to a zero tolerance. And then services for which the customer is not permitted to shop go to zero tolerance. Now, that feels like a very big deal when I think about how accurate can I be for some of those fees on certain deals. And again, as long as you have all your change in circumstance process documented, when you think through the practical application of this, most of the time you're getting a change in circumstance, with the exception of the affiliate fee, to be able to, you know, make whatever change you have. But it's going to take a lot of training for the originators is one of the things that I really see. A couple other things would be just the closing cost estimate, the whole concept of did it have to be given, the closing disclosure. So our new, I can't even get the name right. I still want to call it a HUD 1. I have to stop myself every time from going GFE, HUD 1. I got to say loan estimate and closing disclosure. So anyway, I think we're going to have a, you know how you have like a you know, when is someone going to actually achieve a goal, right? You have like your charts for March Madness. We're going to have to pick a date and see when are we going to actually stop using those terms. So it'll be a couple years, I think. So anyway, the closing disclosure must be given to the borrower at least 3 days in advance of closing in three cases. So when the APR increases by more than its tolerances, when I have a product change or prepayment penalty is added, so we've got kind of a set group. So it's not going to be this panic of every single loan has to have the HUD 1 perfectly completed at least 3 days prior to closing. So that was one of the good news pieces that came out of this. Still on the form, though, is the term total interest percentage. I've joked about this before. I will continue to joke about that we have to tell the customer the tip that we are receiving on the loan. And that loan officers now need training for how to explain the tip that they're receiving is 69%. So I think there's a lot of training around this. There's a lot of technology. There's still a lot of unanswered questions. So certainly you've got to go line by line through the form, see what's going to happen for your systems and your procedures. That's really the lion's share of the impact to the lender is, this is how I finally memorized my keystrokes for filling in the good faith estimate until, and now I've got to teach everybody all the new changes on how that's going to work. We're certainly going to have real-world scenarios where customers and crazy people think of stuff and we go, well, that's just such this crazy little part of the regulation, and you know, we'll have to dig deep and try and find out how to make sure we get those things right, and make sure that we understand the complexity of the ARM disclosures. Where I see one of the biggest complexities in reading this is showing seller contributions and making sure we show all third-party contributions. People thought, why doesn't a GFE have cash to close calculated on it, right? Well, guess what you get when you put it on the GFE? You get regulations around it. So before, people might be going, well, maybe I'm sorry I allowed this to get on the GFE. I'm happy it's there so it doesn't conflict with the 1003, but now I got a bunch of rules around it on how it gets filled in. So you're going to have to get that right. And then last but not least, the form has the GFE, the loan disclosure notice, has a signature line on it. And now we've got rules about that. Do I have to get it signed? Do I not? So everybody's going to have to wrap their head around what the rule says and then what's the best way they feel they can manage it procedurally to, you know, have the best level of compliance with it. So we have plenty of time. That's the good news. It won't be effective until applications August 1st, 2015. brain. So some of you might be thinking, you know what happens, Dave, when we get to procrastinate? We do.
Yeah, we do, exactly. It's the scary part of that.
I think people are going, oh, I think I'll read that in February or maybe March after I get through QM and everything else in January. So that's my quick update, folks, on our new RESPA summary. Definitely something you could probably wait a little bit to pick up.
Well, it's starting to plan. Here's the thing. I'm writing more about leadership, and as I do in a number of the publications, National Mortgage Professional, and I'm talking about leaders that prepare and start looking at this, not in a reactive way, but are finding ways to turn these regulations to a decided advantage for them. And Alan, mm-hmm. I would challenge anyone listening to this is don't push this off. Start looking at this, start studying this, start getting together with people and figure out how can we turn this to our advantage. First of all, being proactive, being out there and publishing it is certainly going to be proactive. But what can I do? Can you do, listener, what can your company do to turn this from a what might be perceived as, another regulation to a strategic advantage? Go read the latest article I wrote on this in National Mortgage Professional. Alice Alvey, thank you so much. Always thankful for you being a part of this broadcast. And it's also just your upbeat personality, Alice. You're always bringing the information in a way that's, I don't always like it, but I always like it when Alice shares it. So appreciate it, Alice.
You're welcome.
Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I know you're going to be on the rest of the broadcast, but I want to make sure I say that.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk to Chuck, one of the nicest people in the world.
Yeah, I can't wait, too. We got Tony Garitano coming up right after the break, folks, so we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Again, this is the November 25th Thanksgiving break. So we're not on a break yet. Some are, but we're working away here all the way up to Thanksgiving. Appreciate you being with us. Tony Garitano is on the line, and I better turn on his mic. It always helps so we can hear him. Tony, good to have you with us. Happy Thanksgiving to you. I got
a
question.
Good as well, Dave. How are you?
Good. I'm thinking about, as we think about the holidays, we look back over 2013. You do a great job, by the way. I should say this segment is sponsored by Progress in Lending, and Tony is Progress in Lending. So I appreciate you. And the look back that you always do over the things that have developed, because there certainly has been a lot of developments over 2013. But let's talk, what is the technology high point of the year so far, Tony?
Well, for me, I think I started to talk a little bit about it last week with you, Dave, but for me, the high point was when the IRS accepted electronic signatures on the 4506T. And I was very optimistic that was going to open the floodgates when it came to electronic signing and that FHA was going to follow very quickly behind. And I think to some extent it has happened, and probably faster than it would have if the IRS was still not accepting electronic signatures.
Right.
But, it still hasn't been the surge adoption, that hockey stick curve happened yet.
The tipping point, as that book, that old book said, but the tipping point is not there. So let's go to talking about, on the other side of this discussion, what are some of the low points of the year?
I think that we've seen, it's probably not a low point. I mean, we see it all the time, and your guest is going to talk about it next, Dave. But I think that there was a lot of consolidation this year in the technology space, and my expectation is that that's going to continue. And I think my main concern when companies become so big and so quote-unquote end-to-end is that it stalls innovation and the opportunity for innovation. And I think, you know, my main fear is that with all of these technology acquisitions, we're going to be left with far fewer companies that are so huge that they don't necessarily look at things differently.
Right.
And lenders are not going to have as many choices when it comes to doing things differently. Not that lenders themselves want to do things differently. So I think, you know, the vendors sometimes push the lenders to think differently. And my concern is that if there are fewer vendors and these vendors become huge companies, that maybe we may not see as much of that in the future.
Well, it's interesting that I think there's going to be consolidation. I'm looking forward to get Chuck's comment on all aspects of it. Now, he focused mostly on the mortgage companies, but there certainly has been a lot on the technology, and we're here to help on both sides of it. But, Tony, it's fascinating to see what's going on the area of M&A. Love to think, do you have any predictions as you look forward to the year where some areas of consolidation might be taking place? Is it just in the LOSs? Or have we seen all of that? Is it the smaller companies that are coming up that are going to be bought up by the Ellie Mays of the world? Something, your thoughts?
Well, I think, I mean, we did see Ellie Mae buy up Mortgage CEO just 2 weeks ago. And my guess is that Ellie Mae will acquire more companies next year as they have for the past 4 or 5 years now. So I think they'll be a buyer. They're also looking to be bought. So interesting.
Yeah.
To see how that turns out. I mean, I expect that every large company that wants to be a player in the mortgage space realizes that they have to have a loan origination system.
Right.
And most of them already do. So I'm not sure that there will be a lot of LOS acquisitions in so much as new players coming into the space looking to buy an LOS, in so much as you might see LOSs acquire other LOSs to grab market share.
Yep, that's what I was wondering.
I think that might be something that continues. And you're going to see a lot of niche companies get acquired by larger companies as well. Like the pricing engines have gotten acquired a lot over the past 2 or 3 years. And I think that, you know, if the government is successful in attracting private investors back into the market, and if we see Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac going away over time, you know, the value of those decisioning engines is going to increase again.
Yep.
So that's going to be something that every technology company is going to want to either do or acquire. I think that those are two major areas. But I think you're going to see a lot of market share acquisitions in 2015.
Okay.
And some small best-of-breed acquisitions too. But a lot of I think you'll see a lot of market share play.
Market share play. That's
also
interesting.
Also, I have to understand, Dave, I mean, a lot of these vendors have now moved to this software as a service model.
Yeah, SaaS, yeah.
So that's going to be dependent on market share. Their revenue is going to be directly dependent on market share. And there's only so many new clients that you can pick up.
Exactly right.
So eventually, the only way to grow your market share is going to be to buy your competition. So I would not be at all surprised if we see a lot of technology acquisitions surrounded around market share, because revenue is going to go down for these guys dramatically next year.
Yep, it is without question. Tony Garitano, you have a busy schedule. We appreciate you taking time to dial in and give us an update on everything technology. Thank you for being an active sponsor, actively involved with the broadcast, and I'm proud to be writing. In fact, I've got an article soon to be published. I'm just sending it to you. Make a few more edits on it, and I'll be sending it off to you to be published in your latest publication. And tell your listeners about that real quickly, if you can do that just in about 30 seconds or less.
Sure, Dave. I mean, what we did was we started a new newspaper called Today's Lending Insight. We compiled top journalists and top industry executives to take you beyond the news and tell you how the news can actually be used to grow your business. So So get the news from Paul and IMF News and Source Media, and then come to Progress in Lending for the analysis that you need to grow your business.
Good. Well, thank you so much. Exciting. Honored to be writing for that as well. Appreciate you. Have a great Thanksgiving. And one of the things we're thankful for that you're part of this broadcast each and every week. Thank you so much, Tony.
Thanks, Dave.
Folks, I'm going to be speaking at the Independent Mortgage Bankers Conference that's coming up in Florida the first week of December. It is December 4th through the 6th. It's at the Intercontinental Hotel in Miami. The Mortgage Bankers Association, MBA National, is putting this on. It has got a great group of speakers and a lot of different topics, one of which is going to be M&A. So, and I'll be doing some radio broadcasts from there. And they go, well, that's not Monday. I say, that's right. We're starting to expand our broadcasts. And the MBA is asking me to do more and more broadcasts from various conferences that they're having. So be sure to check it out. If there's any opportunity for you to come and be a part of the conference, register at the MBA website. And I look forward to having you be a part of that conference, and I'll look forward to seeing you there. Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, is traveling today and so is not able to be with us. So we're going to take a quick ad break and then get right into the main hot topic with Chuck Klein on mergers and acquisitions. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability.
With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business,
please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900.
Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us, everybody. It's November 25th. It's Thanksgiving week, and we appreciate you tuning in and being part of the broadcast. Many of you are dialed in and have been listening to reports of mergers and acquisitions going on. It's one of those areas of the industry that's highly specialized, and very few people can do it well. For example, I think it's really important that they have good poker game skills. I am not someone that should be doing that type of work. I've got an A personality. I just show everything that's going on. If I like the deal, it reflects on my face. But we've got, as our special guest today, Chuck Klein. I don't know how he plays poker, but I'll tell you this. He's one of the nation's leading experts in the area of M&A, mergers and acquisitions, and we're blessed and honored to have him be a part of the broadcast. Also, I'm even blessed to have him as my business partner. So it's good to have you with us, Chuck Klein. And make sure your mic's on. You hear us all right? You there?
I'm here.
Uh-huh.
Dave, thank you so much for having me, and always a pleasure to join you, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your team and to all your listeners.
Well, thank you, Chuck. I appreciate that very much. If you got to check out that handsome guy, he's got a picture up on our website. Go check it out at mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Handsome guy, knowledgeable, and we're pleased to have you here with us. But, Chuck, let's get into the whole thing of M&A. What's some of the reasons our business owners are considering or more motivated today to sell their companies, and why they're getting into this? What's motivating them right now?
Well, I think it's just an important question: is why would they be thinking about selling their company when they're doing very well?
Yeah, especially when they're doing so well. Yeah.
I think you look at your business as an investment. First of all, in any investment, you need to have an exit strategy of some sort. And, you know, Dave, we work with all the major warehouse lenders, and so we speak with, you know, lenders all around the country every single month. And part of our process, we want to know, you know, what their business plan is, what their business model is, but just importantly is what their future plans are. And we ask the question about exit strategy. And it's amazing that usually when the question is asked, you just get a grin or just a blank stare. It's like, yeah, I know I need to do something, but I don't have an exit strategy. And so I think when you look at, you know, the most mortgage companies are owned by one or two people, and a significant part of their net worth, personal net worth, is tied up in the company. And so just for planning for estate purposes or planning for your heirs, that you need to have an exit strategy of some sort. And, you know, exit strategy doesn't mean to be something that happens today or tomorrow or 2 years down the road or 5 years down the road, but it's something that you need to be thinking about. And because if something happens to that owner of the company, very likely the only thing his estate's going to see is cash, and there's going to be no earnings multiple that could be achieved and really to experience the franchise value of his company. So I think first and foremost is exit strategy. I think another reason is, for, especially for a smaller mortgage banker that touches right in Alice's backyard, is compliance. That the cost of compliance and the time invested in compliance is so great these days. And the small mortgage banker scratches his head, and he didn't have to do anything more or less than what the large mortgage banker has to do. And how does he support that with his earnings? And so it's a challenge. And so we're having a lot of companies are coming to us and say, you know, compliance is a problem, and maybe I need to look at a bigger platform to be part of. And finally, we're seeing a lot of companies where the owners are getting older. And, you know, a lot of these mortgage company owners that we talked to today started their companies in the late 80s and early 90s. And they've been around a while, and some of them are approaching retirement age. If nothing else, they want to work a little bit less. And so they're beginning to say, you know, we may want to take some of our net worth off the table. We may want to have a succession plan in place, an exit strategy in place sooner than later. So those are the primary reasons we're
seeing today,
Dave.
So do you see it as a buyer's market or a seller's market, Chuck?
Great question. Usually when you have either of these, you've got a mismatch on one side or the other, that you got more supply or more demand.
Right.
And I, if you had asked this question a year ago, and quite honestly, we ask a question all the time, so you did ask a question, I would have said it's a seller's market a year ago. But I think actually right now we have a pretty good match. I don't know that we have necessarily a lot more buyers than sellers and buyers. But, you know, if we have to lean one way or the other, there's probably more people looking to buy a mortgage company than there are to sell a mortgage company. Now, a strange dynamic that's taken place in the last year is the expectations of value. And the values being paid are probably less today that you would see, you're going to see today, than it would have been several months ago. And the primary reason for that is we've seen decreases in production, and volume decreases typically reflect in profits, but most importantly, earnings compression, the profit margin compression. So that's been a change that we've seen here recently, that even though you have probably a very dynamic market for buyers and sellers, the values have gone down somewhat.
Interesting. Joe?
Yeah. There are about 1,000 questions I'd love to ask Chuck. Going back to one of the things you first started talking about, the you know, the getting out, and are the structures of deals now such that you can get your cash out when you sell, or is it something that you have to wait to earn out or stay on as an employee for a while? I mean, how are most of the deals structured now regarding the cash at closing, basically?
You know, Joe, nearly every single deal we see has some sort of an earn-out attached to it. Now, once again, a year ago, because these mortgage companies were making so much money and were so successful, that the owner had no incentive to sell unless he could get a pretty good multiple of earnings for his company, a lot more cash at closing, because why would he walk away and sell his company for less than we'd get earned the next year or so? But today, we're seeing probably, if there's a waiting, we're seeing, you know, a lot more of the future earnings, the franchise value, paid in the form of an earnout. So it's a dynamic that has changed. But I think it would be very doubtful that unless you're willing to really discount the value of your company, that you could sell and walk away with all cash, Joe. I think that in most cases there's going to be an earnout, and you know, you're just not going to walk away under any circumstance. You know, if you've got your agency approvals, a lot of buyers want, the agencies won't let you walk away. They don't want to see a disruption in management. They want to see a continuity of management continue for some period of time anyway. And if you're a smaller mortgage company, a primarily origination shop, well, the guy's buying you doesn't want your name. You know, he wants your origination volume. And usually you need to stay involved, and your key people need to stay involved to continue on to produce the volumes of profitability he expects from you.
Well, and Chuck, that brings the question of, if you do sell, the tail of liabilities is probably not as large as it was a few years ago, obviously, but is it still something as that buyers are very concerned about?
Absolutely. You know, especially in a stock transaction. You know, the good news is that we're not seeing as many repurchases as we've seen in the past. The bad news, we're still seeing some. And the book of business historically goes back to 07 and 06 originations and the lack of documentation that was being required. But we're still seeing current repurchases, and so they are, you know, in the consideration as well as liabilities. Now, asset sales, typically, you know, there's not going to be any type of repurchase liability, so it's a different circumstance there. But liabilities are still very important, it's, you know, primarily in a stock sale, but even in an asset sale, they're very important. Yeah.
So I wanted one more question and turn it over to Alice. But so what is the single most important factor in selling them if you're on the selling side of the mortgage company?
Well, you know, I try and tell my customers, really, Joe, if it's on the buy side or the sell side, it's the sales price is only a piece of the equation. You know, most guys want to say, well, I got a big multiple of earnings, I got a big sales price at closing. But to me, that's not as important as culture. I think if you could describe it in one word, it's culture. And yeah, you have to have matched cultures to have a great sale. And when I say culture, we're talking about a shared vision. And you get along, you know. You're entering into a long-term partnership in most cases. And it's, you know, partnership is a marriage, and you gotta get along, and you gotta be on the same path. You gotta see things, you know. You don't necessarily have to agree on everything, but you have to have a shared vision of things, you know. And just importantly, Joe, you gotta like each other, and you gotta really be able to get along, because you're gonna be together on a day-to-day basis for quite a while. So culture is critical.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, Chuck, because, you know, we just, as MortgageU, went through a merger with Indicom Global Services, and I would absolutely attest to that, you know, the culture being the same, because that was one of the things that appealed to us, was that, you know, both companies shared the same vision, had the same excitement about what we could do with the product and with the e-learning and all the services that we offer, and how you complement each other. So I can attest to that on how critical it is. And also on the consulting side, when they've called us in after a deal and we're now coming in to kind of work with the operations side, and you have two teams that do not get along, and it's ugly, and that just makes a lot of pain.
Ugly, right.
To try and merge things together there, especially in today's world. So I have a question for you. So who are the investors showing an interest in acquiring a mortgage company today, and what are their motivations today? You know, I know what it used to be in the past, but, you know, you see what people are interested in today.
Yeah, another good question, Alice. That, you know, I think we've talked in the past that, you know, really, we always felt the best execution for a mortgage company was with a bank. You know, that they had needs for each other, and it was just a great match, because you had the needs and requests from both sides that seemed to match and blend together. But they're challenging because of the cultures once again. And, you know, I used to say that it's a hard match, even though they look perfect on paper. But, you know, the banks are very regulated, and mortgage companies historically have been very entrepreneurial and not regulated at all. Well, that's all changed, and so it's a much easier road to accomplish with banks and mortgage companies today than it was several years ago. But, you know, I would say that in the last 2 years, the real market has been non-traditional firms, such as investment firms, private equity firms, hedge funds, who wanted to get into the business. And they were leading the charge, wanting to get in the mortgage business. But, you know, I can tell you, I get probably 5 to 6 calls a week from mortgage companies who want to go out and acquire other mortgage companies. And they see the opportunities to acquire companies. A lot of them have a lot of capital to invest. They've got their platforms in place. They've got their agency approvals. So they've got servicing portfolios. They've got good technology, good people, and have scalability. And so they see the challenges of compliance and net worth to the small mortgage banker can be a real opportunity for them to grow. So we see a lot of mortgage companies looking to acquire smaller mortgage companies or other mortgage companies. And finally, the banks are coming back. You know, the regulators looked at mortgage as a bad word for quite a few years, and now we're seeing the regulators encouraging the banks to get in the mortgage business and to have a presence in the mortgage business as well. So I'm not telling you that the regulators are saying go out and buy a mortgage company, but they want them to be involved. The returns historically have been very good for mortgage companies, especially from an investment perspective. So I'd say that, you know, we're seeing banks, we're seeing the investment firms, and we're seeing the mortgage companies active in the market right now.
Chuck, when it comes to expectations and expectation management, that's a real challenge. What are the expectations of the buyers of a company?
Well, you know, Dave, it's always about returns. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you're buying a small mortgage company, you want their production. And, you know, you don't necessarily look at it from a servicing valuation, but it's the returns you can get from acquiring the loans, which you in turn turn into servicing to become returns on their own. But I'd say their expectation is they want these companies, they don't want you to sell your company and walk away. They want you to continue to grow and to grow your business underneath them, Dave. And I really believe that what the overall goal, if you can keep everybody in place and keep everybody happy and everybody's marching down the path together, that you got some great opportunities ahead of you. And the returns will be there. You know, man, you got challenges. We've always had challenges in this business. But the opportunities today are greater than ever. You know, and I tell you, Dave, what I see coming up here, everybody, I'm hearing all the blues about, well, refinance volume's going away. We're going to have a terrible first quarter of 2014. But I think what's hidden out there is the pent-up demand. We've seen no real estate market for years and years and years, and it's all of a sudden you've got a lot of first-time home buyers, and now you've got move-up buyers who have a chance to sell their houses. So I think if there's a silver lining in 2014, it may be a nice market for new volume, new purchase volume.
So that would imply that possibly retail production channels are more valuable than others, but is that true, or what channel is there? Would you attribute more value to one channel over another, Chuck?
Well, I think, you know, was it Paul who said earlier that the rating agencies don't rate retail or wholesale higher? But
yeah.
I tell you, in the minds of the buyer, retail is considered higher because, and most importantly, it's considered of greater value because mm-hmm. you can really control. You have some amount of control over, you know, the business that your originators are bringing in, whereas on wholesale you don't. You're out there, and the brokers, you know, they're just an independent contractor to you that can bring in whatever you want to buy from. You know, and years ago when we were all employed with different people, Joe Farr told me that really they perceived the value of wholesale was directly reflective on price, that you want more volume, you just lower your price, you get all the volume you want. And I don't know that necessarily holds true all the time, but price is much more reflective in wholesale than retail. So if there's a difference, Dave, it would be weighted more heavily value-wise to a retail shop versus
retail
a wholesale shop.
Yeah. Alice?
Well, yeah, hey, you know, I being from Michigan and obviously in our area, our market, you know, has been kind of a poster child. And, of course, you know, we've talked forever about the sand states and everybody's having their different level of history. So I got to imagine that geographic areas vary. And what areas are more desirable than others today?
Well, you know, great question, Allison. What I'm seeing is there's not the resistance to a lot of areas we saw in the past. You know, luckily we're here in Texas, Dave and I are, and Joe, and it's just hot as a pistol down here that the values, real estate values are good, volume levels are good, so Texas is just a great place to be to origination. Now, I remember in the late 80s, early 90s, it wasn't a fun place to be, but it's very desirable right now. And if you look at your correspondent investors out there, they pay the highest premium for Texas product. But I think all markets are firming up, and really to me it goes back to real estate values. If you have a good real estate market and the values of real estate are firming up, there's no reason you wouldn't want to be there. So the only resistance I still see is there's still a lot of companies who don't want to be in Florida necessarily because they don't think the problems are over there. But, you know, Michigan, with the exception of Detroit, Michigan's a good place to be, Alice. We know some awfully good companies there that have done very, very well in the last few years. So I'm not seeing near the resistance. I think all parts of the country are looked at favorably. Like I say, if there's a problem, it seems to be in Florida.
Well, and I think that's why somebody needs you, because if they're trying to kind of get that exit strategy and they're trying to decide, do I need to expand to other states, you know, the perception of a state in the M&A market is not going to be the same as what statistics or, you know, your own personal information may be about whether or not it's good to expand in the state just because there happens to be a branch right. there who wants to be bought, yes. right? That's why they need you.
Exactly.
So should companies, you know, how important is it to still retain servicing from a valuation perspective? You know, a lot of folks could say, well, what the only value on my book is, okay, I have originators pounding the pavement, or I have a nice deep wholesale channel, and I retain servicing. How important is that now from a valuation perspective?
Well, I think it's very important, and even if you're not retaining servicing, from the buyer's perspective, it's important to be able to. So, you know, if a buyer's not in the business yet, and it could be, you know, one of the non-traditional buyers looking to get in, the investment firms, then, you know, the ability that you have to begin retaining servicing immediately is awfully important to them. So if you've got your agency approvals and you've got a servicing portfolio and you're servicing your own or having subservice, that's very important to these guys that they want to do it. But if you're just a mortgage company and you've got your approvals and you're just out trying to buy other origination units, it's still very, very important, because what it does to your P&L statement, the earnings benefits you get from the day you retain servicing, you know, and Joe can tell you in the old days it wasn't that way, that you know servicing was an off balance sheet asset. And so you didn't really realize it until you sold it. Well, today it's different, that servicing, you know, goes on to your P&L statement immediately. And so the earnings benefit coming from that is very, very important. So it's a huge piece of the puzzle. It's one thing that's driving people to be in the mortgage business, Alice.
Hey, Chuck, a real quick question. What's the basic simple structure of a deal right now?
Well, they're all over the board, Joe.
Yeah. Okay.
If you're looking purely from a value perspective, then, you know, it's going to be your book value plus some multiple of earnings. That multiple might be 1x, it might be 2x, it could be as high as 3x, but it's really the path you're on right now. Are you sustaining the earnings path you were on, or the earnings level you were on 6 months ago, a year ago, or has the drop in volume changed your earnings? Have you had a drop in volume? I mean, we're seeing some companies that haven't had a drop in volume. Now, those companies, once again, were primarily retail purchase business. But, you know, some of them have increased volumes by growing and by acquiring already other companies. So that's, you know, has helped. But, you know, as far as structuring, we're seeing more deals today than we did previously that are, you know, having some stock, where stock is being, you know, offered as currency versus cash. And so depending on what stock you're getting, it could be stock in a publicly traded company or a REIT that might have some easily ascertainable value, then that's part of the currency equation as well.
And is much of it, how much of what you get is actually in the earnout?
Well,
when you're going that way.
It could be, all earnout. I mean, you know, most companies, and, you know, very few deals we see are being done for, at the minimum, the book value of the company. Now, the franchise value, or the earnings multiple, as we call it, could be, you could get 1 year earnings at the closing table. You might get all of your projected earnings, you know, in the form of an earnout. So every single deal is different, but I can tell you it all results from your present earnings rate and your present volume rate. If you're holding yourself close to what you did in 2012 and 2013, you have a much better chance of getting more in the form of cash versus in an earnout.
Yeah, Chuck, when we were doing deals, it was fun. Is it still fun, or is it, you know, how painful is the due diligence process?
Well, that's the hardest. You know, I'll take that back. The hardest part is contract, because you're dealing with the attorneys. And so, you know, it's, to me, the struggle. I mean, I love the deal part of the process. Due diligence is tough, you know, because it takes time. And you just have to produce, you know, documents. But it's not only producing information. It's just as importantly the two sides sitting down and meeting each other and the taxing time on your people. So it's due diligence is tough, but I think just as hard is the contract side of getting your definitive agreement done, because it could take you 30 days to do that or longer.
Well, and as you're talking about, Joe, I know we only have a few, Chuck, we have a few minutes left here. So what do you kind of close with in terms of the time frame people should expect? I know it can take a long time.
Well, I'd say a minimum of 6 months, Alice, that from the time we get started to the time your deal's closed is 6 months. Don't expect less. Now, have we done them less? Absolutely. We've done them as little as 30 days, but that's by far the exception.
Wow, that's a fire drill.
Yeah, it really was a fire drill. It's that part's not fun.
Chuck, we appreciate you so much being with us. Just run out of time here. You could help coach people through this process. They can get a hold of you by dialing or going to our website, mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Folks, today, thank you for tuning in. Thanks, Chuck, for being with us. Check us out for future broadcasts on lookingonlending.com. I look forward to seeing you also in Miami. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.